morning and welcome to MTSU on the Record. I'm Jenna Logue, and we're coming to you from the campus of Middle Tennessee State University in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, and the studios of WMOT-FM. The MTSU Department of Military Science has a new chair. He is Lieutenant Colonel Therrell Cast, and we're going to talk today about the state of military science and what kind of curriculum is required and what kind of students go into military science nowadays and how it's changed over the years. And we're glad to have you on board today. Thank you for coming, sir.
Thanks for having me. It's really great to be here.
First of all, I think we ought to start with an explanation of something you and I discussed off air when we met at the new faculty meeting, and that is why active duty military personnel, such as yourself, although you work here at MTSU, are really reluctant to put yourselves forward as faculty experts in the way that other professors do on hot topics of the day vis-a-vis your own area of expertise.
Yes, well, normally, you know, as a commissioned officer in the United States Army, you're bound by your oath. And that's the biggest deal there. And what the simplest way to explain it to most folks, for me, is there are countries where your military leadership gets involved in politics. And in this country, the military is controlled by civilians. And it's always been that way. And that's one of the reasons why this country is such a success, is that you have civilian control of the military. You really don't want to live in a country where generals and colonels express a lot of political opinions, because that just gets nasty. So that's why we don't speak on certain topics. Are we opinionated people? Yes. Mm-hmm. But we support the chain of command. We have to. It's a discipline thing, and it makes things run a lot better in this country.
You don't want soldiers in the foxhole who won't follow the chain of command because of political feelings.
Exactly. We don't pick our own wars, and we shouldn't.
I'm not sure who should, but that's another issue another day.
That's up to you and your vote.
Right. Why are you interested in a military science curriculum in education, higher education, as opposed to some other area of military service? Why this particular niche of the military for you?
Well, at this point in my career, I've been doing this since 1979, either as an enlisted man and later as an officer. At this point in my career, I have a lot of experience, I have a lot of education in military topics, and this is the one way I can influence the next generation of military leaders. And that's what we're here for. We're here to find scholars, athletes, and leaders who want to serve in uniform. And with all my experience, all the mistakes I made, I want to make certain that they understand what it means to do what I do. Because in today's world, they don't get that from any other source.
Is today's generation of military science student any different from my generation or my father's generation of Americans who want to serve their country?
No, and you'll hear people talk about the World War II generation as being the greatest generation. I think you'll find that was a generation just like any other Americans who had a situation thrust upon them, and they responded well. You still have those people out there. Those people still exist, and they're fighting a couple of wars right now. So I'm very proud of this generation. If they're any different than the way we were, they're more sophisticated in their thought. They're just flat smarter than we are. I mean, I hate to break it to anybody that's over 40, but the young kids are just flat smarter. They have they're a lot more comfortable with technological tools than we ever were, and they ask why a lot more often. And that's something that we all need to be used to. Now that they're here in a learning environment, we should answer the question why, and I encourage that.
Does today's soldier need to be more book smart or more street smart?
He's going to have to be both, especially when it comes to street smarts. In this case, will be cultural awareness, and I've already made contact with Dr. Hibbert here. He made contact with me to get a little more cultural awareness training in the cadets' curriculum, so that as they move forward, they understand that. One thing people don't understand, is people that haven't traveled a lot outside the U.S., is Americans, for the most part, don't get a lot of experience with diverse cultures. Because we're a big country, we don't travel abroad a lot. But we expect these young American officers to go to foreign countries and get along with the sheikhs and the local town council in and around Baghdad.
The Dr. Hibbert to whom you referred is Dr. Alan Hibbert, who's the director of the Middle East Center here on campus, who has extensive experience in Syria and also was instrumental in getting Arabic and Hebrew language courses added to the curriculum here.
Yes, and he's a great resource. But anytime you can take a future military leader somewhere going to deploy to another country and either settle conflicts or prevent conflicts, they need to understand the culture in which you're working. And that's where folks like Dr. Hibbert come in handy for us.
Are today's military science students motivated by different things that motivated prior generations? Prior generations were subject to the draft, were all male, until World War II, in which women served in largely auxiliary capacities. The range of things that women can do in the Army, in all the services, is broader than it ever has been. In the absence of mandatory service, are their motivations different?
You know, I think any young man, you know, when you're being drafted, you're being told to go do something. And you don't really understand it until you have to get into it for a while. Usually your career soldiers back then came to realize they were career soldiers after they did their draft stint with the Army. Well, nowadays, the young man or woman that's coming off the street already understands they're looking forward to this as a career for at least a little while, you know, 5, 6, 8 years, maybe 20 years, just depends. But I don't think their motivation is that much different. I think it puts the onus on us with a volunteer force to better explain what we have available for them. And also, and it forces the government to have better benefits for them, which is one of the things. You know, we have all volunteer force, people have other options, especially people who have education. So it puts on us. As far as us being a more diverse Army, yes, that's one of the things that we need to work on is we need more female leadership. We need more leadership from other cultural parts of America because we are simply a reflection of the country, and the leadership of the Army needs to look like the Army, which needs to look like the general population.
In addition to being an educator, are you also sort of a de facto recruiter? Are you looking at high schools to see if you can attract the best and the brightest to MTSU's military science program as opposed to other colleges' military science programs?
Yes, we do a recruiting. I mean, that's a large part of what we do, and it's recruiting by education because you don't want to have someone in here who really doesn't want. This is a challenge. It's a challenge to come to MTSU and get a degree. It's an even further challenge to overlay the curriculum for ROTC on top of that. So, yes, it is recruiting, but it's not what some people think of when they think of recruiting. The Army's gone away from some of that type of stuff completely. We want people who want to be soldiers, and in my case, I want people who want to be leaders of soldiers. So, I do a lot of that. I have folks there on staff who are experts who can explain the benefits and such as that. But even beyond that, when you talk about recruiting, it's also information. Because there is no draft, most young people, we're about two, maybe three generations away from where the draft was, two generations. And in the living rooms of America, there's not that experience of being in the military. We have it so that if you come and take a class with ROTC, you'll learn about the military, whereas you probably didn't have that before, and you can still walk away, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's the other piece of this is I like the idea that not only am I training leaders, I'm letting taxpayers know, at least in some small way, how their money is going to be spent. Because one of your biggest expenditures as a taxpayer is for national defense. And unless you were drafted or something of that nature, you probably don't have much experience with the military. So that's a secondary mission in my mind is, hey, come take the class. If this is not what you're cut out for, fine. At least you know a little bit more about where a lot of your tax dollars is being spent.
How is the curriculum here different, if at all, from what they teach at, say, the Army War College or one of the service academies?
All right. The service academy is basically the same curriculum. In the Army, there's about three main major ways we get officers. One is through the military academy at West Point. Then there's ROTC and there's Officer Candidate School. There is a fourth one called direct commission, which is used very rarely for medical professionals or in time of need on battlefields. There's been direct commissions. But the three biggest ways there, West Point produces about 1,000 officers a year, and the remainder, for the most part, comes out of ROTC and OCS. West Point's a constant. They're kind of our standard bearer. But at the same time, the Army doesn't want everybody to come through the same machine and same way of thinking, the way of developing solutions to problems and such as that. That's where ROTC comes in. We get all these cadets from all over the country who have such a diverse background, and that gets fed into the America's Army. So it's really a great thing if you think about it, is you don't get the guy right out of the box. And in today's conflicts, we want leaders who have all that diverse background and diverse experience because let's face it, the education you get at MTSU is unique from what someone's getting in Washington State, mm-hmm. okay? It's completely different, and they're going to bring something else to the table. I like to say that the ROTC community is the out-of-the-box thinkers. We're the ones that's going to always ask why, and why do you always do this? And in today's Army, saying we do things out of tradition is not the right answer.
Yeah. Now, you alluded to the chain of command earlier, and you have to know how to take orders, and you have to know how to give orders, and you have to know where your purview begins and ends, mm-hmm. According to your rank. It would seem to some people that the critical thinking skills and the intellectual free-spiritedness that are typical of a college campus or that, you know, academicians aspire to create are mutually exclusive with the necessity to obey orders and not talk back, especially when the going gets tough. So how do those two things intersect in a military setting, especially a military educational setting?
Well, in today's Army, I'm one of the people that believe that we are at an intersection where we are having to learn how to be a little bit different. There was probably a time when you use mass formations to attack, where everybody had to hold the line and move forward with the same foot. We don't fight them kind of wars anymore. We need that free thinker who is in the streets of that small town in Iraq, who is working with those locals, and being able to think outside the box and be able to ask the questions why, you know, because we teach soldiers how to attack, defend, you know, take land like that. Well, what we're having them do in Iraq now is not the goal. The goal is to work with the people. To make them more self-reliant, to help them have a normal government, as normal as they can be over there. And when I say normal, I mean without all the turmoil, without all the bombings and killings. Something else we have to remember is everyone's version of normal is not the same. Yeah. U.S. version of normal is totally different, just like our version of democracy is different than others.
So somebody's calling you now. I guess we can shut that off for a second.
I apologize.
Thanks. That's okay. So this outside-the-box thinking, in part, is necessary with our enhanced awareness of terrorism and the fact that America is not the impregnable fortress that we thought it was.
No.
You know, with asymmetrical warfare, if you don't think outside the box,
exactly.
You're doomed before you start.
Yeah. And the situations, you know, what may help you secure the area may be something as simple as making certain that the young men of the area have some type of employment other than making bombs.
Mm-hmm.
That became a big deal in Iraq. Or that the community needed a source of fresh water.
Mm-hmm.
It's things like that make the difference. I've got a captain over there who showed up about time I did, who just came from Iraq, and he had a lot of face-to-face time with the Iraqis, the Iraqi police, the local leaders. He had to be part of that town. And some of his stories are just amazing. And most of his stories have more to do with helping the community than it does with taking out bad guys.
Yeah. Are today's military science students eager to better understand the Middle East, or are there other parts of the globe to which they would rather go if they had their ruthers?
I think you're going to find that each of them have an interest in different parts of the country, different parts of the world, excuse me. But the focus is on the Middle East because that's where the two conflicts are right now. So, but as things go along, they change, and they'll have interest. There are interest in Central and South America, of course, in Europe, but they all have those interests. And the Army is now pushing them to be more culturally aware. They're for the first time really pushing a foreign language for an officer. It's not a requirement yet, but I can see where it will be in the near future.
Do they see the military as a stepping stone to, or a great stepping stone to a good civilian career eventually, serving a certain hitch and then leaving at a point where they think it is, you know, best for them? Or do they see it as a lifelong career choice?
You have a mix. Some of them haven't made that decision yet. It's too early. You also have folks that also want to serve simply in reserves. They want to go if their country needs them, but they have other interest here, either in Nashville or somewhere else. Because you got great programs at MTSU. You got the music industry programs here. You got the concrete management, stuff like that. Some of those folks want to go straight into those industries, but they also want to serve the country. So that's why they're in the Guard and the Reserve. But if people are – we don't really have a pecking order or anything like that. I'm here to create officers, whether they be Guard, Reserve, active duty, whether they're a lifer like me, or whether they do a few years and then move on to something else. It does prepare them for a civilian career, especially when you come to management and leadership skills.
Well, as we've learned with Iraq, members of the Guard and Reserve can be pressed into service overseas in substantial numbers.
Yes.
If necessary.
Yes,
yeah.
And that's the reason why we have those organizations. But they all have other things that is important to them. And what a lot of people don't seem to understand is the Guard and Reserve is not a small part of your national defense. I don't quote me on this, but I think it's something like 40% active and 60% Guard and Reserve. So we could not have a conflict, certainly couldn't have a conflict that's lasted as long as Iraq has without the Guard and Reserve. You just simply could not do it. But these people have other priorities in their life, so it works. I mean, that's the only way I can say it.
Yeah.
It works. And these are great patriots. But as far as your question about whether they want to be, lifelong soldiers or officers or not, you know, that's a personal choice. Someone that serves honorably and then moves on, you know, I'm just as proud to know them as I am anybody.
What is the level of interest these days? Is recruiting people to take an interest in the military at all any more or less difficult than it has been in your experience?
It's really strange because when the war hit, when of course this is the anniversary of 9/11, when that hit, it was similar to what happened after the attack on Pearl Harbor. Folks, you know, signed up in droves. Then it kind of got flat for a while because probably the length of the war and such as that. But now you're starting to see a resurgence, maybe related to the economy. I mean, there's no secret that the armed forces do better with recruiting during downtimes than we do a good economy because people can't find the work that they want. For whatever reason, they come and join us. I think it's a it kind of goes up and down depending on outside factors, things we don't control. But have we fell short recently and had a really hard time attracting officers? I don't think so. Just to let you know, we're growing right along with MTSU. MTSU topped off 25,000 and some change in students this year.
Right.
Well, I inherited an ROTC program that's pretty much doubled since last year.
That's heavy duty.
It's a good challenge to have, actually. So, but like I said, interest waxes and wanes just like anything else.
Is a kid who maybe didn't have a junior ROTC program in the high school where he or she attended necessarily behind the eight ball if he or she tries to go straight from that high school into a military science program, an ROTC program at a college?
Absolutely not. One of the things that is unfortunate is both JROTC and senior ROTC have the same name. They have different missions. JROTC at the high school level is a citizenship program, and it really works out really well for that purposes. Senior ROTC is there for one specific reason, to recruit, train, and retain America's next generation of leaders. So if you don't have ROTC in high school, can you come to me and still be successful? Yes. And the best example I can give you, being a proud father, is my son went to high school that didn't have JROTC, and he now has a ROTC scholarship at the University of Tennessee. He's a freshman this year.
Wow.
So, and he's doing quite well there. So, no, it's not a requirement. We're going to teach you all the Army stuff. We want you in college so you can learn the stuff that we can't necessarily teach you.
Student athletes on this campus have a special enhancement center to help them with finding tutors for them if they are maybe falling behind in their grades and in their schoolwork because the NCAA has certain requirements in that regard. Is there anything comparable available for military students here if they're having difficulty balancing books and ROTC or books and social life or extracurricular activities, anything?
Internally, we have what's called our mentorship program where the seniors – what I call MS4s, Military Science 4 students, are there to work with the sophomores and the freshmen and sometimes the juniors as a one-on-one mentor. And I also have assigned academic mentors. And that's basically my students are doing quite well in college and get them to help out. Because part of being an officer is caring for the folks that you lead. And this is one way you instill that in the mentor. So the mentor's getting something out of it, as well as the cadet who's having the struggles.
You see, in the military, if you're not good at time management, you're going to be in deep dire, aren't you?
Yes, and that's one of the things that cadets struggle with, just like any other student at MTSU, and it becomes something that they quick realization after a while. Probably by their junior year, they've really got a good grip on it. But everyone, I remember struggling that when I was going to college, is time management, time management, time management. You have to be good at it. So, especially with the challenge of doing not just being a college student, plus ROTC, plus a lot of students at MTSU have other jobs to help finance their college. So there's a lot of them are juggling a lot of good things, but they're making it. They're doing quite well.
If a high school student is anticipating making the military his career or her career, are there any elective courses or any particular courses that you would recommend that they take before graduating high school that would be especially useful if they were going to major in military science in college?
Well, there's no major for military science, especially at MTSU. Some colleges may have something similar to that, but then we do have a minor, but
right.
We don't major. And the truth is, like I told you before, we're going to teach them all the Army stuff they need.
Mm-hmm.
We want them to learn the stuff we can't teach them. We want to learn
history, English, the
history,
usual.
English, the aerospace program, all these other things here, the science and all the rest of that. That's the stuff we can't necessarily give them as well as the MTSU faculty can give them, okay? Mm-hmm. But in high school, there's really not any particular class they need to take. They need to do well. They need to do well in their usual, math, science, English, do well in those subjects. It would be good to try to take some foreign language because we probably are going to send you to a foreign country.
Mm-hmm.
So, that would be a good thing to know.
Have you ever encountered a student who really, really wants to take military science courses and do well in them, but for whatever reason, somehow just does not seem psychologically well suited to a military environment? I know that the military molds leaders and helps formulate character, but are there some square pegs that you just can't put in a round hole?
Absolutely, and what was the good thing about ROTC is it's a four-year program. So over 4 years, that either comes out or the person makes his adjustments. But we work with that. And there are some students that just – and you can't put your finger on it. I can't say this type of person is not a good fit.
You can't give them some kind of a test, some kind of a pre-designed Briggs-Myers test or something like that to determine whether or not – and if they make this score, they're okay, and if they make that score, they ought to try something else.
Exactly. There's been great leaders in this country and in world history who probably wouldn't have made good soldiers, okay?
Yeah.
I mean, that's just the way it is. But others, it brings out something in them. So that's what we're looking for. And I keep talking about scholar, athlete, and leader. When we're looking for that high school student or even that freshman, we're not looking at someone who already is a scholar, an athlete, and a leader. We want to see some potential, okay? Some of these kids, because of the culture they came from, are not very athletic. And we try to bring that out to them through our physical fitness program and involvement in your intramurals. They don't know that they're an athlete because they've never ran more than a block and a half their whole life. So, Nintendo generation sometimes gets in the way. Excuse me, probably Xbox 360 now. So so that happens. As far as scholars, they have to be able to gain admission to the school. They got to have a 2.5 GPA to be considered for an ROTC scholarship. They can still take the classes with a lesser grade, but to get a scholarship and eventually contract as a cadet, they have to have a 2.5. So some of them may need a little work before that. And that's something else about the flexibility of my program. It's not just a four-year program. You can come in at the two-year mark or the three-year mark. We can still work with you and get you caught up and get you ready to graduate and commission as a lieutenant by the time your 4 years of college are up or however it takes you.
Another question I believe I asked you at the new faculty meeting is when you attend the service academies and you're also a student athlete, if you are a pro prospect, you have to put your pro career on hold in order to serve your hitch with whatever branch of the service it it was. That was the way for Roger Staubach, who attended the Naval Academy, and Napoleon McCallum. Is there any similar commitment with college ROTC that you have to go straight in?
You have to serve, but you can serve depending on the needs of the Army and your contract. You can actually serve in the Guard and Reserve. If you remember a basketball player by the name of David Robinson, mm-hmm. who came out of the Naval Academy also.
The aircraft carrier.
He did a lot of his service in a similar vein. A lot of those public service spots for the Navy you saw him do were part of his commitment. So, but yeah, a kid coming out of, a young officer coming out of MTSU will either go active duty for a period of 4 to 5 years or serve in the Guard and Reserve for a period of 8 years. That's the commitment. And that varies depending on whether they have a scholarship or not. That's a very general statement. But we probably don't have time to go into a lot of details, but it depends on the type of contract they signed as to what their commitment is. So,
yeah. As you've probably seen in front of the Tom Jackson Building, our Veterans Memorial, the wall which has been built and the bricks that are engraved with the names of donors, the names of MTSU personnel who have perished in military conflict are engraved on the wall, and there will probably be a dedication sometime around Veterans Day, thereabouts. I just wanted to ask you, since I've been on the committee that's been working on this for the past 3 years or so, what you think of it?
It's impressive that the campus and folks like you and Dr. Frisbee and others, and I'm probably leaving out names. I'm new here, so I don't know all the members of the committee. That's impressive because it's something you folks don't have to do. And you go out of your way to honor these folks. And it gives me chills just thinking about it. But I appreciate what you're doing there. And this campus in general. I'm happy I'm at MTSU because this campus supports what we do in ROTC. And Dr. McPhee, Dr. Miller, the dean of the college I work for, Dr. Cheatham, they are all supporters of what we do and the military in general. MTSU gets it. It doesn't matter whether you agree or disagree with what's going on at the national level. The MTSU faculty and staff get it and understand that the role of a soldier and the role of a future leader that I'm training in the big mix. And we appreciate the support. I don't think I could have picked a better place to come.
Well, it's still a work in progress. Mm-hmm. And at the initial level, it was a bit of a struggle for some people who are more closely associated with it than I am to make people understand, some people understand, that it is a tribute to the young people who lost their lives and to all military personnel. It is not an endorsement of any particular conflict or any particular policy.
Exactly.
It is a tribute to the individuals who gave the last full measure of devotion. Mm-hmm. If people want to learn more about the military science program at MTSU, what should they do?
Well, for those that are on campus, just come on by Forest Hall and talk to myself or any member of the staff. We're real easy to recognize. We happen to wear a uniform every day. I do have civilian staff there who are great support personnel, and they can also answer the questions as well. But there's other options. They can call us at the ROTC department.
And you can go to mtsu.edu. And if you click on the A to Z index and then click on M, it'll take you to Military Science, the Department of Military Science. And your phone number, I believe you have there.
Yes, our phone number. You can call us at, my number is 698-615-898-2406. Or an easy one to remember that's been around for a while, especially if you're calling long distance, is 188-MTA-ROTC.
Did you say that one more time?
1-888-MTA-ROTC.
Lieutenant Colonel Thurl Cast, thanks for being with us today. This is MTSU On the Record. I'm Jenna Logue. Join us again at the same time next Sunday. Don't forget, you can check out the podcast at your leisure at mtsunews.com. And we're also available on iTunes.